you doing? Are you on lockdown? Do you have coronavirus? Have you dodged coronavirus so far? I hope you guys are well. I hope everyone's staying safe and healthy. And as usual, I apologize for putting this episode out late. It's becoming a bit of a habit, but I'm on lockdown now. London is on lockdown, so hopefully these will be coming out a lot more consistent now, but we'll see. I'm making no promises. On this episode of the show, we have director Jared McKnight. To give you a little bit of context, we recorded this back in September when we were on a job together, shooting a commercial up in Manchester. We were about 3 days into the shoot, and one evening just found a bit of time to sit down and have a chat. This episode is really cool. I think it's kind of different to the usual stuff we talk about. It's a bit more getting into like the business side of what a director has to deal with, and he also talks about his experience going from directing content that is strictly for entertainment purposes versus what he's doing now, which is a commercials director and actually having to sell a product with that video. So I found that super interesting to hear the differences that he deals with. I'll catch you on the other side. Enjoy. Jared, thank you very much for coming on the show. What's your job title and what does that mean?
My job title is I am head of campaign content for The Hook Group, which is a online health and beauty retailer that is rapidly becoming one of the most profitable and biggest privately owned businesses in the UK.
So you only deal with video. You don't, when you say content can kind of be everything, but you only fuck with video, right?
So with it being campaign, what I do is I work very closely with each of the departments and each of the brands that the company owns and operates. And I solely run and look after and oversee all of the video content for the campaigns that the company creates. I've got a hand in all of the business as usual content that we make, which is product shots, social media, giveaway content on a day-to-day basis. But solely all of the content that we create with any particular budget, big quarterly campaigns, I look after with another couple of guys and girls in a video team that was 2 years ago, 4 people, that's now almost 30, which is built up of 5 or 6 full-time editors, couple of motion graphics guys and girls, and as of yesterday, I think 14 videographers. But you know, we are rapidly becoming a really big video production outfit that services somewhere in the region of 100 brands that all sit under the THG, the Hook Group umbrella.
Before we get into kind of your backstory and how you got to where you are today, obviously I'm freelance. I don't work for the Hook Group. So at what point on a project, when do you decide, or what happens where you're like, okay, our in-house guys aren't going to do this, or we need to get someone external to do this? Like how does that happen?
What's really important to say here is 2 years ago, the Hook Group was making some video content. We're talking from MyProtein, you know, well-known sports supplement brand, you know, how to do a bicep curl, you know, what is protein? Some of the beauty stuff, like how to put lipstick on. We're talking really, really entry-level video content shot on, you know, pretty much homemade cameras. This is how entry-level it was. And between 3 or 4 years ago to now, the company's grown exponentially. The money that they're making is astronomical. And the brands that we're fighting against are creating best-in-class, super high-end video content on a day-to-day basis. And at some point, there's a requirement for us to make really shit hot video content. And there's absolutely nothing against the, you know, the fantastic talent in-house. But if we want to shoot a commercial style content, or we want to create something that rivals Adidas or something from Estee Lauder or L'Oreal, then there's a specific need for us to bring in crew that have got that ability to shoot and light and to pull focus. Because when you're talking about a young in-house video outfit of 90% of the guys and girls have just either had a bit of an interesting video, or they've picked up a SLR, made some music videos, or thought, you know, this is a kind of cool way to make a living. These guys and girls are yet to get to the stage where they're at a level to shoot really high-end content on really high-end cameras and understand how to light, how to move the camera around, how to deal with being on a set with big clients. So it's just a case of when needs must, we have to bring in people that are of a specific level that we can have a conversation with to say, here's what we're trying to shoot. And instantly you'll be able to understand, okay, this is the kit I'm going to need. This is how I'm going to shape the light. This is what lenses we're going to use. These are the modifiers. This is the glass. That, you know, young guys and girls that are just starting out in their video careers haven't got to yet. But in the same respect there, it's also really important to give those guys and girls exposure to guys like you, the other guys that we're using on set this week, you know, unbelievable ACs and gaffers that have just got this wealth of knowledge that we wouldn't necessarily be able to expose, you know, young members of staff that are shooting product or doing interviews on a day-to-day basis with an FS7 or an A7S. You know, they're not going to get that exposure. So there's probably 10 projects a year where we'll bring in, you know, external staff that fit the purpose for what we're trying to shoot. You know, as you know, not every DOP can shoot beauty, not every DOP can shoot, you know, running, you know, moving shots, not every DOP can
shoot liquid,
exactly, you know, niche. Yeah,
everyone has a niche.
I think, you know, to simplify that answer, a company like the Hook Group is profit driven, cash focused first. The most important thing to the business is profit over anything else. So if we can get a guy or a girl who works for us to shoot it, which means we don't have to hire somebody like you, sorry, man, we're not hiring you.
Yeah, and that's fine. That's why there's so many in-house filmmakers in companies like that.
Definitely. I think what's really important to note as well is you can manage process. You can say, here's how to prep for a shoot, here's how to behave, here's how to do your kit, here's how to organize your folder structure. You can't manage creativity and drive to learn. Got one guy in house, James, whose work ethic is through the roof. Came in, music video shooter, GH5. He's like, wow, look at this. If he looks back from 2 years ago to where he is today, you know, he's had the exposure to, you know, slide the DSLR to the side and pick up the kit that, you know, everybody goes starry-eyed over, the glass that everybody wants to use, the equipment. It's like, wow, this is what they're shooting the movies on. This is what, you know, the guys and girls that I watch in the TV shows and the adverts that I love, this is what they're shooting on. So although we're profit driven, we're also quality driven, because if the product's shit and the video's shit, then we're not going to sell it anyway. So we have to put an airtight explanation together of why I'm going to go for this camera and this glass, and what the hell is a grip? What's a gaffer? You know, the guys don't understand what that is. But when they see the content with and without, they're like, okay, we understand that. And then they're like, all right, how can we get that guy cheaper? Or how can we get that guy to come and work for us? It's not going to happen. So, you know, the trade-off of external staff and internal staff is a really tricky thing to manage. But the opportunities are there for the internal staff to level up. But it's not for me or the other guys and girls in the business to say, right, suck it and see, fake it till you make it. You got to go off and prove that you can do the do's before we're going to hand over the Alexa or the Venice or the Phantom.
So what were you doing before this? Because you told me before you started recording, there was a time when you thought you were going to be a professional golfer.
Yeah, crazy. Never in a million years did I think, you know, I'd be directing content, ads that people are watching and dealing with, brands that everybody knows about. Because for pretty much my whole adult life, the plan was to be a professional golfer, and all of a sudden, you know, that obviously was apparent that it wasn't going to happen. So moved out of my mom's house after coming back from Australia, thinking everything was great. It was get a job, moved to London, worked in, you know, the world's worst industry, bit of recruitment. I was like, this isn't for me. And then the next couple of years was a mix of you know, the most perfect situation of being in golf and knowing the right people and stars that were just making, you know, headlines, transcending the sport, and being extremely lucky to have access to some amazing people. So I got a job at IMG, that's now WME, IMG, you know, world's largest sports media entertainment firm. They own and run Premier League productions, Wimbledon, the Rugby World Cup, you know, all the sports shows that you ever watched on television growing up, you know, it's all shot through IMG. You know, IMG Models, biggest modeling agency in the world. You know, the kind of sports stars and movie stars that they've got on their bookies, the who's who of the glitterati of sports, media, entertainment, films. And I got a job logging sport. And for one day, it was the world's best job. Literally writing down what happens in football, in rugby, in golf, and I thought, this is great. And then it wasn't, because it was totally boring. But what it did is I learned what a wide shot was. I learned what a close-up shot was. I learned what a slow-motion shot was. I learned what a GV was. And I was like, wow, these are creative decisions that cameramen and directors are making, when before I took it for granted because I just watched telly. I was like, this is really fucking cool. So did that for a couple of months and got an opportunity to be a junior assistant producer for the European Tour. You know, for 90% of the people in the world, golf's the world's most boring sport. But I got this opportunity to go from hating my job to being out speaking to the world's biggest stars in the game, creating a television program that went out every single week, which was a news magazine show. I fucking won the lottery. Won the lottery here. And I'm spending time with cameramen and career television people, and met people that did live sport. And when we're talking about cinematography and we're talking about the use of a camera, when you're doing live sport, there's no second takes. There's no like, oh, reset, we'll go again, miss the focus. It's like, you've got to be able to follow that ball from 0 to 200 miles an hour, that's going over 300 yards. Incredible. So these guys, you know, they're not a cinematographer like you, but these guys can do things that nobody else can. And it's unbelievable. So then you start picking those guys' brain, you know, how do you do that? What lenses are you using? Why are you doing that? What's white balance? How does that lens focus, you know, from here to there? How does that work? And it was like 6 months ago, I was trying to, you know, coerce people into changing jobs. And now I'm speaking to Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and, you know, traveling all over the world. It's like, this is the nuts. I was like, you know, never watch television the same again, because I tried to learn and understand, you know, how things work. And met a guy called Tom Greaves, who's a sleeping giant in the creative world of social media content. And changed my life forever. Just had no idea how lucky I was at the time to just have this exposure to these incredible technical people and a couple of amazing creative minds that basically set me on a trajectory to not working in television, but working in the internet and being totally immersed in the moving image. And it was just like, you know, where do we go from here?
So tell me about how that weekly show that you were on, the company scrapped that and ended up doing something completely different. And what, like, tell me about that, how that happened.
Okay, so Tom Greaves, who was my boss, he's basically, you know, first time I met him, he basically just tore me a new one, because I was just, you know, rolling around, interviewing guys, pissing about, you know, basically just like, this is the best. He's like, turn your brain on, because, you know, what we're trying to do here is, you know, do something special. And he was just a risk taker, a maverick in the internet world, of creating digital content that's a giveaway to the fans. There's no sales pitch attached to it. And what he did, he got the world's best players, I don't know if anyone's seen the movie Happy Gilmore, to run and hit a ball. And I think it was Aberdeen Asset Management or Barclays who was sponsoring the event. We were like, there's no way that we're putting this out. It's crazy. This is stupid. Stupid. You can't get Ernie Els and Phil Mickelson, gods of the game, to fanny about. Did it anyway, and went viral. You know, we're talking 15 years ago, 12 years ago, something like that. You know, viral wasn't a thing. But we're talking millions and millions and millions of views. This thing was put on the news. It was all over the world because whether you get drunk at the driving range with your pals or you've never played golf before, the first thing anybody does is, ooh, Happy Gilmore. And what Tom did, and still think it's genius to these days, he looked at what people are doing around the world and got people that other people love to do those things. Filmed it in a way that, you know, local news style, wide, in focus, is the white balance right? Give it away, done. You know, no rendering of colour, no what pitch profile are we going to be shooting in? How's the light falling off? What are the shadows doing? Super simple, giving people what they do at home, scenes for what sports stars doing, and it exploded. And we went on a tear for the next 4 or 5 years, breaking world records, getting people to hit stupid shots, hitting clay pigeon shots out of the air with a Dubai background. And this guy's just a god, and he's teaching me everything about shooting and editing for giveaway content to a captive audience. No sales pitch in it whatsoever. And then for some godforsaken reason, I decided to leave there and come to the Hook Group, which was a sales-based e-commerce firm. All of a sudden, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Is that right? You just said you were creating commerce. Is that right?
Oh, no, sorry. Creating content for commerce. Beforehand, I was creating content for a captive audience who loved a sport or had an affinity to a particular sports star. We were given free rein from huge brands, you know, Rolex, BMW, British Airways, to create content for the events that they sponsor. And they basically just said, give us an idea, we'll trust you, go and do it. You know, I'd give you a link to a couple of things. It's crazy, this stuff that we got up to. And I just soaked it all in underneath Tom, you know, in the sporting world. He's like the guy that created the internet, nobody knows the game, or the guy that created the Predator football boot. It's like trillions of pounds worth of boots. He's the guy that, you know, you watch content for the NFL or NBA and they're like, we did that. He copied it. Well, Tom did that. He did that. And everybody else is copying it. It's like, wow. You know, nobody likes golf. But when your content's on the news or, you know, it's on Reddit and you're clocking up millions and millions and millions of views, organic, all organic, none of this PPC bullshit. You know, they thought, you know, you get a bit complacent and it's just like a win. Are we going to go viral? Of course we are. And then you change jobs because you think you know what you're doing. And in reality, I knew nothing about content to sell something. And that is, I think I've probably done it the right way around, because I learned how to produce under Tom, how to produce content that means something with a story, and how we give that away, and what's the point of that shot? Why am I turning up to a shoot? I'm not just going to shoot everything and hodgepodge and edit together later. He taught me this. If I'm going on a shoot, I know exactly what I'm getting, why I'm getting it, how it's going to fit in the edit. And that kind of preparation, you know, was unbelievable for me, especially for a guy that knew nothing about video a couple of years previous, nothing at all. You know, just switch the telly on. That was it. Film on your iPhone. And all of a sudden, you're immersed in every single aspect of the process of creating a piece of content to give away to someone. And now you watch things, it's just like, you know, what's the point? You know, it's not as easy to shoot something like that. You know, if you want something to be funny, you best know who you're speaking to or how it's going to be funny before you go in, because that's, you know, that's not an easy thing to do.
If you've built up a track record of creating viral content and people are assuming that you're just going to like hit that same level of viewership every time.
Yeah, because all of a sudden, you know, a television program that had a budget of over £1 million a year is gone. And all that money is now being pumped in what's called original content. So the pressure is, are people going to watch it? Are these people going to have eyes on it? Because if you can get people out of that crappy sphere of golf to watch content, then people, we put sponsorship in there, and that's how we, you know, that's how we get in their homes. And that's the way, you know, that the content works from this kind of thing. So yeah, you know, how do you, you know, the metrics for TV and social, obviously totally different, but when you have 10 or 11 or 12 back-to-back viral mega hits, you know, you kind of think, yeah, we're doing all right here.
If we fast forward to where we are today or this week, and just talk about that, because it's like, it's such a contrast to what you just talked about and what you used to do. And just so people get an idea of like the difference in how things work on set and the things that you have to deal with, because it's always different for the DP compared to the director.
Definitely. I think looking specifically at this week in comparison to my previous job, you'd have a gang of cameramen that would all stand together with their ENG cameras, big servo zooms, white balance, away they go. These guys do their jobs. Everybody's got a job. Boom, hit the ball, follow the ball, frame the interview, make sure the sponsor's things in the background. It is, are we peaking? Great. Then fast forward to what we're doing this week. We're creating a Christmas campaign for Look Fantastic. You know, not how many girls who are buying loads of beauty products are listening. You know, but these are one of the biggest beauty retailers in the world that are reselling from, you know, blue chip, you know, Uber brands. And we're creating a branded piece of content with some sponsored content in there for Burberry, for YSL, Aveda, another. And effectively what you and I are challenged with this week is bringing up Look Fantastic's quality of content to the level where these Uber brands say, okay, we want to be associated with you. Because if Burberry look at the content that Look Fantastic's making and it looks shit or the colour's dead, they're not going to pay money to feature in the ad. Because as you know, most of the time, if you're scrolling through Instagram or you're looking through YouTube or Vimeo, you see something instantly. If it looks great, it's framed nice, the colour's good, or, you know, the light's perfect, you're like, I'm going to keep watching. But in this world of targeted marketing, which is what the Hook Group is all about, you've got to get that right straight away. So I'm on you, like you wouldn't, well, you would believe, because you've been dealing with it for 3 days. You know, we spent an hour today getting a ribbon right for somebody to pull in 50 frames, because, you know, that shot is just as important as seeing a Burberry lipstick or a YSL concealer or whatever the bloody product is. You know, I'm not a beauty guy, but there's the pressure on me is to create this campaign, because one thing's for sure is people are buying beauty products at Christmas time, either to look good for their Christmas party, or guys are looking to buy it for their partners or whatever. So if we fuck up this week, then I'm either back to golf or I'll have one strike and you're not getting hired again. So, you know, it's amazing. You know, the process of, you know, even getting to the stage to shoot this thing has been crazy, because we have to baby, you know, walk through baby steps to the brand of Look Fantastic, of how we're going to show these brands that they've paid for the content. You know, this is the shot. We're going to replicate this. We're going to make that product look amazing in this way. And it's, you know, it's difficult. It's taxing. Whereas in my previous life, I in focus, is the white balance right? Great. Now we've got to get it perfect. I can't shoot in light like you and Tuck, who's gaffer this week. And, you know, the guys at AC, you know, these are people that are just experts in what they do. All I've got to do is try and stitch an idea together of how we're going to be able to say to the customer, yo, if you want to buy some lipstick, we've got you covered and we'll get it shipped out to you for free in 24 hours anywhere in the world, which is mega, mega important for the Hook Group. So big project for me personally, you know, great to have you on board, but we just couldn't do it without a real crew. So, you know, big changes in my life, from sports content to perfect lighting and perfect framing. So
Well, near perfect. There's no such thing as perfect.
Well, you know, we have to get as close to perfect as possible because, you know, people's heads are on the line here, you know, because, you know, when you're working in a business that the most important thing is cash, then if we do a really bad job, then, you know, they're the ones who employed us, you know, they're the ones who chose me to, you know, direct the ad. So no pressure for the next 2 days.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people listening have either experienced or heard about a very common situation that happens on set, especially with commercials. You're on set and you're like, who the fuck are all these people? The people from the brand or an agency or someone on the set that's kind of, you feel they are making your life difficult. They're not doing it to make your life difficult. They're doing their job, and a byproduct of that is really finicky questions or requests. I feel like because you're on the inside, you probably have some perspective on why those people are as, let me choose this word wisely, I don't know, finicky is, I don't know if that's
anal.
The word anal. Yeah. Why, yeah. Why, what's happening in the background for them to be making those requests and asking those questions? And because ultimately it slows things down. I think that's why everyone gets so frustrated. But, you know, what are they having to deal with that we don't see?
Okay, so I think for the Hook Group, it's really, really important to remember that, you know, when we're creating content for massive brands, you know, just again, use Burberry for this example, just because we're, you know, shooting with them this week. I'm not working for Burberry. So the guys and the girls that are on the set that are, you know, busting our balls to get this right, they've got 10 people in the background that have been massaging that relationship with Burberry for 6, 7, 8, 9 months to get them to feature in this content strand. So the person that's on the set that's dealing with one brand one day, one brand the next day, one brand the next day, they're there making sure that that brand attaché or that brand representative that comes on is so super happy, because if they leave and go, this campaign's going to be shit, or the brand aren't fighting for us to make sure that our brand looks better than X brand or, you know, the other brands previously, you know, these are the brands that hold all the power, because as a reseller, you know, obviously you want to be able to cater to everybody, but you want the premium brands because that's where the cash is. So when you've got a head of marketing that's being really, really finickety about the placement of a fingernail or the placement of a candle in the background that's flowing a bit of flicker on a bottle of serum or something like that, you know, you have to really, you know, swallow a bit of pride and something and go, you know, I get it. You know, she's representing the 12, 15, 20 guys and girls that have bought this brand in to a point where they've paid us the money to make this content for them. Because one thing is for sure is the brand people aren't going to come in and go, Jared Carter, you know, we're not kicking it with that, because they can just go, we won't deal with you again. So when the people on set are saying, I'm not happy with that, over and over and over again, you have to try and have this top-down view of, think of what's actually going on at the brand here. How important is this shot to this whole campaign, not just for Look Fantastic, but for the brand that's associated with it? And then you start to think, okay, you know, it's just a, you know, a slider shot here that, you know, we've given a pull focus from a candle to somebody in the bath. It's like, right, I get it. Because that candle or that lipstick's driving £1 million a year. You know, if it takes us an extra half an hour or it pushes another shot back, it's like, right, okay. But yeah, at the time, it's just like, right, it's fine, it's in focus, but, you know, they're playing a bit of back and forth with the brands, you know, they're, you know, sticking up for what's right, you know, I'm looking after your brand more than any other brand. And it's, you know, like I say, it's kind of playing the game. But, you know, no doubt tomorrow when we do some stuff, it will happen again. And after this conversation, you'll be like, right, get it. You know, I get what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And probably, you know, make our relationship with those guys a little bit better, because, you know, there's that little moment where you give each other a nod and realise, you know, I understand that you're probably panicking a little bit because this brand are so super important to you.
Does. I mean, because, yeah, I get it. It's all, I mean, I've done it enough times. It is always still like, it's always not frustrating, but you're just like, okay, let's move that box 3 degrees to the left. Like, but I think there's maybe people that, yeah, that haven't, maybe they haven't actually experienced it yet. So if they get to that point that they do, at least now they're maybe a little bit better prepared.
Yeah, look, it's not making any difference to the frame. You know, these people half the time are looking at their phone, or, you know, they're scrolling through Instagram and they can't really see it, but they're playing the game with the brands that they're servicing. We're looking after you. Forget what Jared and Carter are doing. We're looking after you. You know, I'm going to make sure this shot is perfect for you. And the quicker that you understand that, it's not an ego thing. It's not like, look how important I am. It's everybody's got a job to do. And especially in, you know, this e-commerce retail world where cash is king and economics always prevails, you've got to let these people have their moment, because you'll change it. You'll do the shot. You'll turn around to say, was that good? And they won't even be looking at the monitor. But they've said their piece.
Yeah, so they've signed it off. If they said they like it, then
that's it. Yeah.
They've signed it off. Yeah. Well, at that point, at least.
Yeah. Coming from IMG to here, instantly realizing that, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I was out of my depth.
In terms of
how to create content, you know, the kind of, you know, the success of the content that I was making beforehand got me the job because my stock was high. But then when briefs started coming in, I was like, never been in a studio before.
Yeah.
You know, don't know how to light a product.
You're basically headhunted, right?
Yeah.
For the job you're in now. You're headhunted and you'd won an award, which gave you a lot of, you're in a spotlight, right? So you're a hot property.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what kind of prompted you to jump ship. So then what was the sort of the biggest challenge from going from that to what you're doing now?
The biggest challenge undoubtedly was, so you come in, loads of success, this really incredible boss that gave us all the space that we needed in the world to come up with ideas and then slave drive in the best possible way to get it done. Got the new job, me and my partner, we moved up north, you know, the whole London thing, let's get some, you know, some more space, you know, the whole family thing, fantastic, you know, wouldn't change it for the world. But first day, first brief, got to sell this protein, a new protein powder, look at the pouch, and it was like, shit. Yeah, I can shoot, I can understand exposure, but you've never been in a studio, you know, a 1K, you know, what's Kelvin, you know, what, Kevin, you know, this is it, you know, what do you mean we're going to render the color properly for this, you know, this packet? And it was just like, you know, you think you know video and social content, but, you know, when you're giving something away for free and you're asking for nothing in return, that's a totally different thing when you're saying, buy this product. And in, you know, took me a while to figure out, you know, what we're actually trying to do. And, you know, you clash edge with people. It's like, right, let's build the brand. Let's go out there and tell stories about people. And then at the end, we just put, oh, it's buy this brand, or, you know, add, just plonk that on at the end. And people go, they're cool. I'm going to go on their website and there might be a deal for me. Or I might go, oh, I'm into that stuff. But at the Hook Group, data-driven, contact-heavy, targeted media spend. If you go on a couple of sites, you harvest your data, click okay to the cookies, you know, if you're into skateboarding or you're into skipping, we've got your data, so we're going to go hit you with an ad that says I'm going to sell you these wheels or this grip tape or whatever. And I was like, well, I don't kick it with this stuff. What I want to make is cool, fun stuff that people that are kind of into this shit are going to say to their friends, have you seen that video from My Protein or from Glossy Box or from Coggles or from iWoot or whatever one of the brands that we own? Or, you know, that hotel brand's fantastic. So to forget that, we're making content that lives on social media, but it's an advert. The point is click through and buy something. And that was really difficult for me because I didn't know how to sell anything, because previously I wasn't selling anything. I was selling a, you know, an escape from the office for 10 minutes or something to watch on the tube of somebody trying to whack a golf ball through a melon or hit a putter 200 yards. I didn't do the melon thing, by the way. That was all Tom. But, you know, it's just like the whole world was turned upside down because I thought I know what I was doing. But when somebody said we're going to get the viewer to buy something, it's a totally different relationship with the video content and a totally different relationship with the guy or the girl that's shooting it. Because all of a sudden, framing and colour is important. So it's like, fuck, I best learn about that. And quickly, where you need people that can achieve that en masse, you know, clothing fit videos. But in 10 years' time, they might be shooting for a brand that they've done for the Hook Group. One of those brands might become the next Estee Lauder or, you know, whatever the behemoth brands are. And they might go, that guy was the guy. I'm going to take him or her with me. And then you're on that rocket ship trajectory, like the guy we were talking about who shoots water. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The liquid guy.
That's it. Yeah, you know, guys, yeah. We used to work with guys that, you know, follow cricket balls. There's not a lot of guys that can follow a cricket ball or a golf ball. There's not a lot of guys that can shoot beauty or, you know.
And the golf ball thing is, like, I never really thought about that until we met and started chatting about that. Because that's especially if it's a sunny day, following a fucking white golf ball in the sky with just a blue sky that's probably pretty pale if it's, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, these depending guys the are looking angle. Through black and white viewfinders as well, you know, it's
yeah
pretty tricky and they, you know, they crash zoom out again and, you know, you have a go.
Oh, mate, I've tried.
It's just like, you know, what are these people doing? You know, these guys are rock stars in their tiny little world.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple of cameramen that can follow a ball from an aeroplane. You know, there might be three or four cameramen that can do that in the world. You watch it. You think, it means nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you think nothing of it because you expect it.
Yeah.
It's that good that you don't notice it.
Yeah.
Which is probably a good sign of anything that's done well, is that if it's done well, you don't notice it. It's only when things are fucked up that
you notice it. You know, you think about, you know, cinematography as well, you know, really great cinematography, like where the camera's in a room where you think, you know, why is it there? If it looks weird, like the view, why is the camera there? Or why is that person moving towards the camera in this way? Or why are they following them there? You know, it's only when you start to understand, you know, good cinematography and camera work in certain aspects that you start to look at cinematography in other worlds and other realms. And you think, is that really good? Or, you know, that guy or girl is amazing at what they do because I don't even notice it. You know, you just come to expect it. Mm. So, you know, the Ashes are on at the moment, but, you know, you watch that and the guys follow a ball. You know, they go dead center frame and it's moving at 150 miles an hour. You know, next time you've picked up the camera, you try and follow a tennis ball or you try and follow a bird, you know, tracking. You know, it's no mean feat. And these aren't super wide lenses. These guys are punched in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, these the balls and things are moving quicker than a bird, that's for sure.
Yeah. That, I mean, I've shot basketball and that's a lot bigger. And even that is fucking difficult.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. There is a saying, no disrespect to anyone from America listening to this, because I know I have a few American listeners, but there's a saying that the riches are in the niches. Because, you know, they say niches instead of niche. It's niche. Sorry, guys. It is niche. But anyway, the riches are in the niches. So if you have a niche, that's where the money's at, you know, because you've got a lane.
Yeah, look, that's, you know, an interesting segue talking about, you know, what your lane is. And, you know, there's an awful lot of positives. And, you know, people always obviously see a lot of negatives of working in video in-house. You know, you think, oh, I can't find my niche if I'm only working for these particular brands. Where I'm shooting the same shit over and over again. But, and what I learned in my really, really fortunate early days in this career is there's always somebody on set or in the building that knows something that you need to know about creating video. And, you know, if you go in-house as a young guy or an experienced guy, you'll be able to learn something about shooting video that will make you a better editor, a better, you know, director, a better creative, a better cinematographer. And, you know, if you decide to move on, you know, you pick these things up as you go. You've got to be adhesive. And never in a million years, you know, I'm not a beauty guy, but there's a hell of a lot to learn from the, you know, the art of video, of shooting something like this, because you can take those, you know, the understanding of how the brand relationship works with the consumer. You know, you take that into your next project and you really impress a brand with a couple of ideas because you've thought about that brand and its relationship with the consumer. So, you know, you've got to think, said it before, that top down view of, you know, it can't always just be about your creative vision and shooting beautiful shots and the sexy imagery. You know, what's the payoff? What is the point of the video that you're making? You know, if you can try to understand what the point is of the video that you're making, then you're halfway there to understanding, you know, what the first shot of the day is and what the last shot of the day is.
Yeah, for sure. And I think for me, at least as a DP, I have to make it look how you want it to look, and you're making it look how somebody else wants, the client or the brand wants it to look. And I always want it to look as good as it can. But sometimes, yeah, you kind of just got to let go, you know, like today was a prime example. I didn't think it looked amazing, but everyone was happy. And that's something I'm slowly getting used to, is like, it's not how I would like to light it, but I did tick the boxes and everyone was happy. And you just have to get used to that and move on. You make it look as good as it can within the realm of what is expected. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, I imagine that it's super rare. Today, perfect example where you've got me, you, the AC and the gaffer going, you know, this is too lit. We all agree on it, but everybody from the brand and the brands that are in are going, this is perfect. This is absolutely perfect. You know, they're high-fiving. You know, got to take ego out of it for a moment, exactly. And just be like, you know, I'm here to do a job. I'm here to do a job for that brand. They're paying me to get something that they want. If we go, no, we got to go a couple of stops lower here and move that around and not actually show that.
It's not my video. It's not my film. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah. It's my ball. I'm going home.
Yeah. Exactly.
You remember, it's not my ball, mate. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard of people like DPs doing that with like narrative passion projects and kind of trying to take over, which I think is really bad. No matter how inexperienced that director is still their film, you know, like you can get your point across, or at least try and argue your point, but it's not my film. It's never going to be my, as a DLP, I think it's never your film, you know.
Yeah,
you have a hand in that film, and even not as cool as you are with the director, but yeah, it's not my film, it's not my video.
That must be so tough, you know. It must be so tough for you, because obviously, you know, creative guy, you know, you're looking at something and I think, yeah, we can make this better. We could make this better. But what's better to you, not is necessarily what's better to me or the brand. It's, you know, what is better?
Yeah, well, it's subjective, isn't it? Yeah. It's completely subjective. But I mean, I guess I'm sure we're all the same, but I enjoy the process anyway of pre-production and planning and like chatting to you constantly, and with any director, like working out a look and how things are going to look, and then okay, how are we going to create that look, what we're going to use to make that, and then being on set and actually doing it. Like I enjoy the whole process, so that kind of overrides any decision that gets undone by other people on set.
But you know, you also got to remember, you know, the process that goes into making that light that's perfect for those brands that we're working with today is the same process that is making the light perfect for how we wanted it to look. Do you know what I mean? There's no difference whatsoever. The end result is still somebody thinks it's perfect. Well, obviously there's no such thing as perfect, but somebody is in the room that's going, that's it. And that, you know, as long as the most important person in the room, obviously most would say the director, or, you know, most of the time, you know, the brand, if they say that's it, you know, job
done. Your job.
As long as you don't fuck up the edit or the grade.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, I think that's like the perfect place to wrap this up. If the brand or the client is happy, you and I have done our job, even if it looks fucking five stops overexposed. Maybe not five, but you know, yeah, even if it
four
looks
and a half. Look, man, the podcast is amazing. I hope that the viewers don't find stories about golf and, you know, local news style content super boring.
Cool. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Peace. And we are back. We're back here in the now, in the right now. We're not in the interview anymore. We're here. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I hope you learned some shit. I hope it helped pass 40 minutes of coronavirus lockdown time. If you want to check out some of Jared's work, head over to his website, which is jaredmcknight.com. I'll also put a link in the show notes so you can just check from there if you want. On the next episode of the show, we're going to have something a little bit different. It will be just me, no interview, no conversation, but I will be answering the questions that you guys sent into me on Instagram. I'm actually really looking forward to doing something a little bit different on the podcast and also trying to help you guys out on the way. So keep an eye out for that, especially if you sent a question in. Other than that, wash your hands, stay safe, sanitize, stay home, wear a mask, wear gloves, wear a fucking hazmat suit. Do what you gotta do, but just don't get sick. All right, guys, I'll see you later.